We're still looking at the series of sermons entitled, Be What You Are. The question is, as a Christian, what am I? A lot of us may come up with some very vague answers as to what I am as a Christian. We're down to the 13th item on this list of Be What You Are. And as you can see through the little insert, it's going to be, You Are a Pearl of Great Price. Not long ago, all of us, I assume, witnessed by television the fires in California that swept through certain neighborhoods, turning multiple numbers of homes into ashes. The next day on the news following, you would see the people who were returning to what was left of the house after the fire had swept through it, digging through the ashes, trying to find anything that was of value, what they would call, I guess, a prized possession. Maybe it had been something they had bought, something that they had made, something that they had been given. For some, they said, we are looking for the family photos. For that to us would be the most treasured thing that we lost in the fire. Others would be looking for something else, I guess, as their most valued possession. I talked the other day to a man. He was telling me he went out and bought a very expensive, safe, fireproof, theft-proof, must weigh about 500 pounds, and he put it in his closet. I said, what'd you buy it for? Put my guns in. So to him, I guess, his prized possession would be his guns. But anyway, if somebody asked you today, do you have a prized possession? Now, a lot of folks in the fire said everything we had was lost, but none of us were hurt. And that's the most important thing, because then the people, the family members, are the prized possession. Do you have a prized possession? In case of a sudden disaster, what would you run and grab to try to save in as your most valuable treasure in the house? Maybe you have nothing. How about God? There are a lot of things on this earth that you could say would be treasured by God. He made all of them. They were all created by Him, but does He have a prized possession? You ever think about that? Does God, as He looks at His earth, have a prized possession? Well, let's let Jesus answer the question. Chapter 13 of Matthew, verse 45 and 46. Jesus is sitting here, seven parables. This is one of the parables, and He says, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a merchant man who is seeking goodly pearls, who, when he has found one pearl of great price, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. I think Christ here is portraying Himself to be the merchant man seeking the prize, seeking the goodly pearl. Then when he finds such a pearl, he says he goes and sells everything he has that he might buy. His object is to possess this pearl. It would be his prized possession. It's the one thing on this earth he wants more than anything else. And he'll pay whatever price is necessary to gain possession of this goodly pearl. Now the next question is, what is symbolized by the goodly pearl? It is of such great price. For that answer, go to Titus chapter 2, which is our main text this morning. Titus chapter 2, verse 14. One advanced advantage you have over me when I give you these scriptures, you can get there before I can. Titus 2:14. Now, Christ gave Himself, that is paying whatever the price was in Matthew, in the parable, whatever it cost Him, Christ would pay it. Which meant that was His life on the cross, the crucifixion, His death. He gave Himself for us. The us indicates the pearl. He gave Himself for us that He might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself, and I'm going to change this now, a pearl of great price. Purify unto himself, it says here in the King James, a peculiar people. You say, well, I don't want to be peculiar. Well, we'll understand that a little bit better in a few minutes. That's what King James says, peculiar. Now, if you're not reading from a King James Bible, you're probably not finding that word peculiar at all in the verse that you're reading. Let me give you some other versions and how they render this same verse in 2:14. He desires to purify himself, a people for his possession. Another, he desires to cleanse us so that we can be his own people. Another, he wants to purify himself, a people, to be his very own. And lastly, another, to purify for himself a people all his own. In other words, he seeks to gain for himself a prized possession. That possession is his redeemed people. That's the one thing on this earth that God prizes above anything and everything else would be his possession, his pearl, his people, his purified people, a people he says, these are my people. Our value to him lies in nothing that we have done, only from what we have allowed him to do. You see, the pearl of great price is not just found, it has to be made. And it's made by Christ himself. Now, it's up to us whether or not he allows or we allow him to make us into a pearl of great price. We become a miracle pearl. No such pearl exists. He has to create this pearl himself. But I have a choice as to whether or not I would like for him to possess me, to change me, to make me his, to grant him ownership. Thus, we're a peculiar kind of pearl. That's the word peculiar. We're a peculiar kind of person. No one on the face of the earth is like us. Us meaning the redeemed of the Lord. Because he makes us peculiar. He makes us unique. He has to find us. He has to search for us. He must seek to possess us. But that's up to you. You may say, no, I do not want to be a pearl of great price. No, I do not want to be possessed by Christ. No, I do not want him to own me. And the majority of mankind is in that category. They are not his most esteemed possession, for they are not his possession at all. When we tell people, give your life to Christ, we're telling them, volunteer to allow him to make you into a goodly pearl. Allow him to own you. Allow him to possess you. I have explained in past messages this thing called possession and the process that's involved, but maybe it would be a good idea if I went through it again. One lady who many years ago visited this church, she asked me when I went to visit her, what do you mean when you say a person is lost? It's a common expression that you may hear Christians use. They may even ask you, are you saved? No, you lost. It is a kind of a strange question because you say, no, I know where my house is. I know where I am. I'm not lost. So what does the Bible mean? What do we mean when we say a person is lost? Let me try to explain that to you. If you had a dog, as most of you probably have had in your life at one time, and then your dog ran away, what do you say about your dog? My dog is lost. God had man at creation. Man sinned and man ran away. Adam and Eve went and hid from God. God now says, just like you would say of your dog, I lost man. It is God who has lost something. And so we ask the question, where is he? And God said, he's far, far away. So far away, I can never see him again. I will never own him again. I'll never have him again. He's gone. He's lost. And so God is the one that has lost possession. You follow me? When I say my dog is lost, I mean I no longer possess the dog. He's gone. He's no longer my possession. He's somewhere out there, I guess, but he's not in my possession. Now, the error that lost man makes, by the way, sin is what separated man from God. The fall in the garden is when man walked away from God, ran away from God. And the error that lost man makes is the assumption that he is now free. That he is no longer possessed by God or by anyone. He is free to roam and range wherever he so desires. He is no one's possession. But the Bible teaches lost man is possessed. And one of the blind spots in his mind is that he doesn't realize he is not free, but he is possessed. Someone has found him, and who found him has caged him. He doesn't know this. There is a joint ownership of three powers that have captured the dog, or captured lost man. One, he is possessed by sin. But he doesn't realize this. Two, he is possessed by the devil. He doesn't know that. And number three, he is possessed by death. Eventually. That will grab him. That will put him under. That will bury him. He's not free. He's not free to live as long as he's ours. He is possessed and he does not know this. Now what Jesus trying to accomplish on the cross was to make possible his finding and repossessing of lost man. I found a way to get man back into my possession and out of the possession of three that now possess him. I have found a way again to gain ownership of my lost man. Now that's what Christ accomplished on the cross. And his goal is going out trying to find lost man and talk him in to being repossessed. Coming back under God's ownership. Coming back into God's presence and living there. And out of the presence of the three that now possess him. Now, this hold that the three powers have over lost man in the Bible is spoken of in terms of slavery, in terms of bondage. Luke chapter 4, verse 18. What Jesus is talking about. Luke chapter 4, verse 18. Jesus says regarding himself, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor." By the way, it's the gospel of deliverance. Deliverance from not just the penalty of sin, which is death, the grave, and hell, but it's also deliverance from the three powers. That whole man I mentioned, one was death, but also sin and the devil. "He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted." Now notice, he has sent me to preach deliverance to the captives. Lost men are all captive. They don't know it. They think they're free. But they're not. That's the great blindness that's over the eyes of an unsaved man. "And to recover the sight of the blind," and notice the last one, "I have come to set at liberty those that have been bruised by two owners, sin and the devil, and eventually bruised by death. I have come to set at liberty these lost people. Again, a lost man sees himself as free. At every turn of his life, he says, I have the right of choice. I'm in charge of my life. I make all decisions about what I will and will not do. I'm free to do as I please. I make up my own mind. I make my own decisions. No one tells me what to do. But the Bible says he's wrong. Shall make you free. You shall be free indeed, which means if the Son doesn't make you free, then you're not free indeed. If you're not free, then somebody possesses you. Somebody controls you. Someone influences you. And therefore, you're not free. That's just the obvious implication of the Scripture. And the pearl of great price becomes those people that were once possessed by sin and the devil and are now the possession of Jesus Christ. Now Jesus says, they were possessed by them, they're now possessed by me. I now own man. He's no longer lost. He's now peculiar. Peculiarity, folks, means he's free. There are not many free people walking this earth. So, in America, everybody's free. No. No, not according to the Bible. Now, those who consent to being released from the possession and control of the sin and the devil and the death are the pearl of great price. And those are the only people on this earth that are highly prized and treasured by God. They're His only possession. And they're peculiar again in the fact that they are no longer bound as lost men are. And so when I say, be what you are, I'm saying, as a Christian, be free. Talk free. Act free. Think free. Live free. Walk free. Be what you are. Be free as God has made you to be. Romans chapter 8, verse 15. Romans chapter 8, verse 15. Many of the prayer requests that people make today, save my marriage, my child's on dope, all the problems that you and I hear about, the sadness and the sorrow and the grief, the problem is, folks, they're not free. And all these problems these people are causing are caused because they are possessed and they're under bondage. And they're acting exactly like their possessors tell them that. You'll never heal the marriage. You'll never change the child. Because someone is compelling them to act and be like they're doing. They're out of control. And the only solution is to set them free from those thoughts and compulsions that make them act and do what destroys the marriage, destroys the home, destroys the family, destroys life. They're not free. So I wish my child would change. Your child can't change. There is something manipulating your child, controlling the child. He's a taskmaster who possesses them. And at the crack of their whip can make that child do whatever they want. They have enough power and can apply enough pressure. They can make you do anything. And people say, I never thought that person was like that. I never thought that person would do such a thing. They wouldn't until their possessors apply enough pressure in the right circumstances, and then they can be made to do anything, people. Anything. People understand this. The solution to all of our problems of man's making is you've got to get him free. He's captured. He's possessed by those who possess him. Sin dominates and controls his mind, his thoughts, his actions. Romans 8, verse 15. Paul says, we have not receive the spirit of bondage. We are not bound. Again, the fear. Oh, he's saying here, Christian, you no longer have to fear being bound again by the enemies. Sin and the devil. No longer do you have to fear being bound. You're free. God's not going to put you back over there. He's not going to send you back to them. He's not going to let you go. He owns you. He possesses you. Don't fear them getting you in bondage again. You're free. Galatians chapter 5, verse 1. Stand fast, therefore, Paul says, in the liberty. Hold your ground when you finally get free. Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. Meaning there are folks that are not free. Those who have not allowed Christ to possess them. To be their Savior. To be their Lord. And he says, since you are free, do not, for goodness sakes, do not get entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Once you get free from sin, the devil, don't run back over there and say, put the handcuffs back on me. Put me back in chains. Let me go back and again be controlled by you. Don't do that. Man, when you get free, stay free. Don't get tied up with your enemies again. And you may be puzzled why I keep referring to sin as a taskmaster, as a slave driver. Most of us say, well, you mean sin is some act I commit. No, that's true. But sin is far more than that. And you need to understand this. Sin is a living, powerful force. That's the best way I know to put it. It's a force that lives inside of our brain. It's a powerful, manipulating force, a power that operates. It produces sinful deeds and acts, but there is a force that operates in us. And it is strong. Stronger than your will could ever be. It is powerful. Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter... Have you ever made a resolution you hadn't kept? Why didn't you keep it? Oh, I tried. Oh, why didn't you do it then? Oh, I could. Well, do it. Well, I didn't do it. Why? Well, that just didn't do it. You couldn't do it. Not if that power within you, that force says, you are not going to change this. Some things that power lets you change. And some things you are not going to change. I don't care what. That's the bondage. Now, chapter 7, verse 14. My goodness, my time is gone. All right, here we go. For we know the law is spiritual, but Paul says, hey, I find myself carnal. I find operating in myself a source of power. I am sold, or in bondage, or possessed, or owned by sin, a power. For that which I do, I don't want to do. You ever done that? I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have said that. Why did you do it then? I couldn't help myself. All right? That which I would do, that which I hate, Paul says, I find myself doing. How can I explain this? Why can't I have self-control? Why can't I overcome these things? I didn't want to do that. Have you ever had regrets? Our life is filled with regrets. Said things that I should have bit my tongue. Why didn't you? Well, I just couldn't do it. He says, if that which I do is what I do not want to do, then I see operating in me a law. Somebody inside of me is laying down a law and tells me to obey it. And I have to obey it. It's a bad law. Thou shalt strike thy wife smack dab in the face. That's a law. Now, I don't want to do that. I want to abuse my wife. But here comes that law. And I mean, God, Sarah, And he says, do it, do it, do it. And the louder and louder and louder. And all of a sudden, I'm out of control. And whoppo, we're going to knock her down. Oh, I'm so sorry, honey. I didn't mean to do that. Will you please forgive me? I'll never do it again. And that old sin power says, I'm going to pass over the law one of these days. So all of a sudden, the circumstance is right. Here comes that law. You will smack your wife in the face again. Or smack your husband in the face again. Whatever. And no. I said I'd never do it. You do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. And you. Temporary insanity. Have you ever heard people plead that? I was temporarily insane. You're right. That's the honest truth. It doesn't free them of guilt, in my opinion. But they're right. They have totally lost control. And smacko again. Oh, I'm so sorry. I won't do it again. The life of abuse. They don't really want to do it. Embarrassed, shame, but yet they cannot break free of the possession and the law that tells them, you will obey my law. And you will. And Paul says, I find this thing operating in my... And so he says, verse 15, going down here. For I know, verse 18, I know, I have discovered inside of me there is a flesh. There inside of me there is a power. And in that power there dwells nothing good. But there is also in me a will to do right. But I cannot find a way to do right. I cannot overcome the power that urges me to do wrong. For the good that I would do, I don't do. And the evil that I would not do, I end up doing. Now, if I don't do what I want to do, I find that it is sin that dwells in me. I find there is a law operating in my mind that when I would do good, evil is upon my mind. Verse 23, I see a law in my members that wars against the law of my mind. And now notice, and it brings me into captivity to the law of sin. Whatever that law, which is going to lead me to sin, is, I'll do it. I have to do it. I am compelled to do it. Now, we've given this sinful power, this sinful source, a lot of names. We call it the sinful nature and the fallen nature and the animal nature and the carnal nature and the fleshly nature. We have a lot of names for it. But it's there, people. And it's what frightens us so much of other people. You can't trust somebody who is not free. You see, if I am possessed, I am now, in a real sense, a slave to righteousness because now the law of Christ comes into my play. And I now no longer am possessed by sin and the devil. And when the thought comes, hit her in the face. Jesus says, no, you don't have to do that. You're free. You can hug her. You can kiss her. You can forgive her. You can tolerate. You can adjust. But you don't hit her. And there's a calmness, there's a peace, and you don't hit her. It's different. Why? Because I'm free. That compulsion is no longer possessing me. I no longer have control over me. This is how you can see us all around you, people. You look at the alcoholic. The law is, you drink when I tell you to, and you stop when I tell you to. Now, if I can drink and hold my own, it doesn't matter to me. No. But if your possessors, if you're not a Christian, pearl of great price, your possessors, if they ever desire to, they can make you an alcoholic. No sweat. No problem. It's easy. They can obsess your mind and put such pressure on you mentally that you will do anything that they so desire. I'm telling you, folks, it's a powerful influence. It's what binds homosexuals. It's what binds dope addicts. It's what binds abusers. It's what binds sex addicts. It's what binds pornographers. I mean, they're hooked. They're addicts. All of us, if we're not careful, as Christians even, see the tentacles of the old possessors trying to reach back and repossess us. And we say, hey, no way, man. I am free and I can be different. And that's why Jesus, or Paul says, we are a holy, purified, peculiar people. Folks, you and I have the control that is given to us by setting us free from the possessors of sin and the devil. The pearl of great price is designed by God to be free. It's a great message I think we have as a Christian church. You are a unique, a peculiar kind of person in that sense. You are free to obey the laws of God, and the sin and the flesh cannot stop you if you so desire to please the Lord and obey His laws. Father, we're thankful today for this freedom, this deliverance from bondage that You have provided to the pearl of great price. And may we, as we decide to be what we are, may we truly live and act and think and talk like we're free. That we're no longer under the control, the persuasive power, domination, and obsession of sin and the devil.